This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Happy Saturday, folks. Another week has come and gone. And you know, our president, El Presidente, he's attended his 419th, that's 419, fundraising event. Who's he raising the money for? He's raising money for all those Democrats who say they want nothing to do with him, they don't believe in him, they disagree with his policies, they really didn't mean to vote for him 97% of the time. You know who they are. Louisiana, Georgia, North Carolina, and on and on. It's just unbelievable. What's more unbelievable is that it appears, give or take, half the population actually believes this crap. In the meantime, our Kurdish quote-unquote allies, who in truth are our allies, are showing guts beyond belief in Kobani on the Syrian border. I mean, outmanned, outgunned, surrounded on three sides, no escape. And despite promises for the past year, not one single plane load of ammo, not one single plane load of guns, not one single plane load of weapons that can match the American weapons that ISIS is using. But Barry wants us to believe that he wants to help them. He wants to stop ISIS, degrade and destroy. I see. You know, over the last week, there were two Iraqi military bases that fell to ISIS. And there was all this hand-wringing, etc. They were on the outskirts of Baghdad. By the way, they fell with all the American equipment in there. More tanks, more armored personnel carriers. So, let me ask a question. I mean, I'm not a great military strategist. How come we didn't bomb those bases when they fell? Why didn't we destroy all that armament, armored vehicles and tanks, so ISIS couldn't use them? How difficult would that have been to do? I mean, you would think that a squadron of jets off one of the carriers could have done that in two or three runs, long before ISIS ever got their little paws on equipment which they will use to fight supposedly our Iraqi allies, supposedly our Kurdish allies, and supposedly the 5,000 men we're going to train in the Syrian Free Army. You know, with every passing day, with every purposely missed opportunity, I think it becomes clear that what I have been harping on for months, it becomes clear that Barack Hussein Obama really would like to see ISIS win. You mark my words, I said it months ago, but when this election is over, this paltry air campaign that we've launched, this supposed 60-nation coalition, what a joke. I mean, how stupid do you think we are? Turkey, according to Susan Rice last Sunday, was ready to jump into the fray, offer their air bases. And of course, you know, we all took it with a grain of salt because we know Susan Rice, like her boss, is a big liar. You know, the video in Benghazi, yada yada. We're not fighting this war to win. In fact, we're not fighting this war to even help our supposed allies, the ground troops, who are going to throw back the ISIS threat so American troops don't have to be involved. We're not doing anything to help them. And I think that the actions of our quote-unquote commander-in-chief speak far louder than his timeless, shall we say, and repeated rhetoric I don't know about you, but I'm almost to the point where I can't listen to the guy. I mean, you can't believe a word he says. There's an ulterior motive for everything. This Ebola deal, remember, we were promised by this same commander in chief that Ebola would never reach our shores. And if by chance, that infinitesimal chance, that one in 95 billion chance, it did, we were ready. It wouldn't go one inch. Well, obviously, that's untrue. We talked last week about my thoughts about the CDC director, Dr. Friedman, and now it looks like the rest of the media has caught on. You know, usually it takes them a few months, but in this case, a week, and everybody's decided that he really doesn't know what he's doing, and that he's just a shill for the administration. The administration, by the way, again, our commander in chief, he actually postponed two fundraising events. Hoo-hoo! One in Connecticut, one in New Jersey. I mean, he kind of has them locked up anyway, doesn't he? And he went back to the White House to make a great show and take some photo ops of how concerned he was with this Ebola outbreak. And then he made a big thing of mobilizing National Guard to send to Africa, not to Iraq, not to Iraq or Syria to fight ISIS or to assist our allies that we're not giving guns to fight ISIS, but instead to Africa. Well, you know, one thing the press didn't tell you is that those troops that he mobilized to go to Africa were already planned to go to Africa. This is nothing new. He just kind of rephrased it, you know, to make it look like he was doing something. And then, on top of that, once again, assisted by Susan Rice, National Security Advisor. Boy, doesn't that just give you goosebumps? He decided that they're not going to cut off flights from East Africa. Never mind, there's airlines all over the world that are doing it. There's countries all over the world that are doing it. Even the little islands, Cozumel, wouldn't even let a cruise ship with a potential Ebola victim on it. It wouldn't let them come into port. Police wouldn't let them off the ship. So we have these little countries displaying common sense, but in the United States, we don't. Instead, I actually heard an interview from one of the administration shills about how if we stop the flights from the East African countries beset by Ebola, we'd harm their economies. Okay. Maybe we would. Maybe we wouldn't. I must ask this question. If you have American lives and a potential epidemic, pandemic, or even an outbreak of Ebola in the United States, and Americans are subjected to the ravages of that really nasty, nasty, nasty disease, with a 50%, give or take, some doctors put it at 70%. Some African countries are experiencing 90% death rates, mortality rates from it. If you're going to hurt an East African economy by a temporary cessation of flights, which bring in 150 people a day, that's not a huge amount, unless they happen to be carriers of a vicious virus. I don't know what this makes me. I guess it makes me a racist in the eyes of progressives. So what? Since when does the economy of Liberia stack up against the lives of Americans? I couldn't even believe this guy said this in this interview. Is this what this administration thinks? Really? And let's go one step further, folks. You know, I've been talking the last few weeks about things which are underneath the smokescreen of ISIS and Ebola, which, by the way, are huge problems. I'm not saying that they're something that should be ignored. But there's other things afoot. You know, the United States is waging a partially successful war against the Russian ruble. Now, there are several reasons that this is happening, but I will tell you that part of it is not so much punishing Russia for Ukraine, because I don't think our president gives a damn about Ukraine. But it is retaliation against Russia for the very successful attack that Russia, China, and the other BRIC countries have launched against the United States dollar. Go back in the archives. I talked about this a year and a half ago. 40% of the world's transactions are now conducted in currencies other than the dollar. When Russia said that it would accept the yuan, the Chinese currency, and euros, and other currencies instead of petrodollars, i.e. United States dollars for oil, which is Russia's largest export, that really hurt the dollar. Right now it's mass because, as bad as everybody else is doing, the dollar looks kind of good and there's money inflowing to the treasury into bonds and stuff. But that's going to change. Trust me, that's going to change. Did you know that the United Nations, the same outfit that we support with dollars, actually came out with a report about how to replace the dollar with a world reserve currency? And we fund these guys to do this. And of course, it's applauded by Brazil and South Africa and Russia and China, the BRIC countries. In the meantime, not only is a dollar under attack as the currency that is used to buy energy and other goods and services, not only has it been supplanted in 40% of the world's transactions just in the last 6 or 7 years, but you know, one of the things that's coming our way is inflation. I've talked about this in previous shows, and you can look it up. Most of them will be under economy and finance. And I have some articles posted also this week. But I've talked about how inflation is kind of being hidden from you. You know, fuel and food is out of the CPI. I've referenced you to realstatistics.com so you can get a true picture of inflation. There's a lot of things, there's a lot of lines converging in the heaven right now. Not just militarily and geopolitically with all the things in the Mid East and China and the South China Sea and Russia and the Ukraine. I mean, that's one set of problems. The other set of problems is financial. You know, one of the things that debtor nations must have, they must have inflation, because inflation helps them pay back their debts. In other words, inflation decreases the value of dollars or euros or whatever the currency is. So you're paying back your debt in less valuable increments of money. And you're paying back that debt, by the way, in money you're printing. Because the more money you print, the more of that money there is, and the less each piece of that money is worth. What is worth most, there is least of. What is worth least, there is most of. It's just basic economics. And all the countries of the world have figured this out. So I think that you will look back at this time period. You know, there's been some big discussions between big economists. Are we headed toward a deflation? Are we headed toward an inflation? And I have long held, once again, I'm no brainstorm, just 2 + 2 = 4 and water runs downhill, that inflation is going to be the end product of all this horrible fiscal policy in the United States, Europe, and most of the Western world. And by the way, in some of the emerging Asian economies too. So let's just take a look at all the lines that are converging in the universe right now that point toward a period of rapid inflation coming our way. In other words, your dollar will buy less. It's not that the value of goods and services has increased. It's that the purchasing power of your dollar will be decreasing. That's what inflation is. So first, let's look at China. You know, everybody talks about China being the super economic power, and it is. And it surpassed the United States in GDP for the first time. I talked about that in last week's show. We're now number two, not number one. But its economy has slowed pretty dramatically from what it was doing. And, you know, the Chinese have gotten used to that rapid rate of growth. So there's a lot of pressure on the Chinese banks to ratchet up kind of their currency, to revalue the currency, to print more currency, to stimulate their economy much in the same way we did. And it looks like they're going to do it. And that's going to create inflation, inflationary waves. In Japan, you know, the Japanese Prime Minister, Abe, as they call him, told us a year ago that he was going to inflate the Japanese currency, i.e. make it worth less, so that they could export more. And he is in the throes of doing that. So you see inflation kicking up in Japan, who, by the way, is a huge exporter of goods and services, so that inflation carries across the board. You know, they're talking about cutting the corporate tax rate there by a third to a top rate of 25.5% and changing the pension system. Gee, does this sound familiar? Okay, India. Nobody ever talks about India. However, the Prime Minister there, Narendra Modi, they now have India starting on a long-awaited track of rapid growth. A massive infrastructure overhaul. Railways, highways, airports, power transmission networks. It wants to open India's agriculture and retail sectors. So India is beginning to inflate. And that's a huge economy, folks. That's 1.2 billion people. It's a seventh of the world's population. Okay, in Europe, Mario Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank, the ECB. Europe is floundering. They are in deep caca. I mean, not only do you have the countries that I've talked about in shows 2 years ago, Italy, Greece, Spain, Portugal, the pigs, as they're called. Not only do you have those countries kind of sinking into abyss, I mean, once again, we're hearing about potential bond defaults. But you have the European Central Banks bailing out these countries by buying their bonds. It's kind of like what the Federal Reserve is doing in the United States. You print money and you buy your own debt. As you print money, in the case of the European Union, as you print euros, each euro is worth less. And Draghi has basically come out very clearly and said that before the European Central Bank will allow the European Union to sink into deflation, which is what was beginning to occur with the slowdown over there, that they are going to inflate the economy. They're going to print money like crazy, kind of like the quantitative easing over here, which has done much, you know, it sowed the roots of inflation in the United States. So you have all the world's major economies now, India, China, Europe, the United States, all inflating on purpose, some to achieve growth, some to repay debt, some to avert deflation. But the end result, mark my words, is inflation. And this ties into family safety. You know those food stocks that you want to put together? Sooner rather than later, you'll save lots of money. You're going to stockpile fuel or anything like that? Sooner rather than later, even though fuel is taking a dip right now. Anyway, all this is going to be a further attack on the dollar. The other thing I wanted to go over today is what's going to be happening to basic commodities. If you have this inflationary, long-term, dramatic inflationary trend coming into play because of all these lines converging, China, India, Europe, you name it, you're going to see the price of commodities go up. That means the cost of building a house, the cost of buying a car, the cost of doing anything which involves metals, whether they're precious metals or normal metals like copper, is going to go up. Keep this in mind as you're kind of planning your expenditures over the next year or two. And I'm not even sure we have a year or two before it really kicks in. You know, last but not least in this show, yes, I still have that cough. I, by the way, thank you for all the emails from you folks who were worried about my cough in the last two shows. It is better, but yes, I still have it. And chasing elk, since it is elk season, has not helped it much. But I digress. One of the things I really wanted to talk about in this show is the Democrats and the elections. Both in this show and the last show, if you look under the politics section of the articles I posted, there are a number of fundraising entreaties from various Republicans or conservative candidates in various states for Senate seats. I might have a few House seats in there too. Let me urge you to send these guys and gals $10, $20, $25 each. I mean, is it worth $100, $50, $150 to support these candidates? Are your children's future not worth $100? You know, collectively, you get 10, 20, 30,000 people sending $100. It's a big deal. And there's only 2 weeks left, a little over 2 weeks left to the election. This is a big election, folks. If Barack Obama is going to be brought to heel in the last 2 years of his presidency, if we're going to have majorities in the legislative branch, which can hopefully have the cojones to protect the Constitution and to shoot down, sue, whatever they got to do to stop a lawless president and his executive orders. You know, that phone and pen that he picks up only when he wants to. Then this is the time to do it. And I want you to understand something, because I watch with incredulity as you look at these polls and you see, for instance, Nunn, the Democrat in Georgia, pulling to within a point or maybe even a point ahead of the Republican there. I mean, what are people thinking? Really? Really? You don't believe for one moment that these Democrats, who are getting dollars from Barack Obama's 419 fundraisers, and who, in the case of incumbents, voted anywhere from 95 to 99% of the time. We're talking about Udall in Colorado. We're talking about Begich up in Alaska. We're talking about Landrieu down in Louisiana and Hagan in North Carolina. Look, these people are disciples of Barack Obama. They are progressives through and through. They are not Democrats. To call them Democrats is insulting. And the first thing that these people are going to do is they're going to elect, once again, Harry Reid, arguably the most sinister of the Senate progressives, of the administration progressives. He's like the executioner who works for Obama. They're gonna elect Harry Reid, the leader of the Senate again. He's gonna sit on bills, tax reform, all sorts of bills meant to stimulate this economy, slow down the growth of regulations, control the agencies, and support the Constitution. 300 bills this man has let sit on his desk that have come up from the House. Ironically, in many cases, to protect these very same Democrats who profess to now hate Obama and, oh my God, I never like what he thought, and I'm for coal, and I'm for this, and I'm, you know, I mean, it's just the biggest bunch of rubbish you have ever heard. After all the lies they've told you, they expect you to believe the last and biggest lie of all. I've changed. I don't like Barry anymore, and I don't like Harry either. Trust me, folks, every one of these people will vote unanimously, first thing, if they get elected, to reinstall Harry Reid. And from there on, they can pretend that they're supporting this, that, or the other, or that they don't like A, B, and C. And when called on to vote, they will support Harry and Barry 100% again. And in most cases, they'll be protected because Harry Reid, in order to not embarrass them in front of 2016 elections, will make sure that the bills which require tough votes, the bills which mean something to you, your family, your future, the Constitution, the country, never get to the floor. Because politics and ideology trump everything. Just look at Obama, who uses the photo op of postponing two fundraisers, gee, did 419 instead of 421, to pretend to work on this Ebola thing, and comes out of 2 days of intensive meetings and names a Democratic progressive political hack as the Ebola czar. Do you realize this guy is the guy who counted chads in the Al Gore Bush election? No medical experience. He's a hatchet man. He's to make sure that the message, that the politics of this thing don't get out of control. Barry doesn't give a damn about Ebola. He only cares about politics. So, you know, if you have a chance, click on the politics section this week and last. Send some money to these candidates, Joni Ernst up there in Iowa, Cory Gardner down there in Colorado, all of them. $10 each, $15 each, $20 each. It'll make a difference. And get on the phone. Do you know somebody in Kansas? Somebody in Iowa? Somebody in North Carolina? Any of the states which are hotly contested, and really most of them are, incredibly. Call those people. Make sure they're going to vote right and make sure they vote. And tell them to pass it on. You can do your part, you know. If you can get 5 or 10 people to the polls, each one of you, and you can throw in $50 or $100 spread out amongst 5 or 6 campaigns, you will have done something for your country, for yourself, and for your children and the children of your children's children. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We'll talk to you next Saturday.